Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan Lanor Elves Sacks. Ethan, this is another card that you've been very staunchly against since OG Dominaria, and it's important in this format, I think, in Foundations.
It is important. I agree. I think off the heels of our green episode, thank you to everybody who reached out. Had a lot of folks saying, like, all right, I didn't get on the green train until the episode, but like had some success. I got a message from my dear sweet co-host who is fully green-pilled now. Yeah, Llanowar Elves is important. But you knew that already, or at least you theoretically knew that already a couple weeks ago.
Yes, but I think I had an epiphany about it that I want to share with you, and I want to see if it checks out. Because I've been playing Llanowar Elves more this past week because I have been fully green-pilled. I've really enjoyed drafting the green decks now. Specifically elves, like my favorite thing to do is Llanowar Elves into a Beastkin Ranger. I think that's the name of it, the 3-3 trample. Mm-hmm. And then follow that up with a Dwinen's Elite or something, you know, or double Dwinen's Elite. You can have some really explosive starts with elves if you've got Llanowar Elves. The thing that I keep doing with Llanowar Elves, which I think is a card evaluation fallacy in some senses in this format, but also it's just not good in other formats. But when you have it on turn one, it's insane, right? Mm-hmm. But then when you draw it on turn eight, you're like, oh my God, this card is horrible, right? Mm-hmm. That's the same thing as drawing a Mox on turn eight and saying that a Mox is horrible. And I would never say that about a Mox, you know what I mean? But I do that constantly with Llanowar Elves.
It's except that a Mox literally replaces a land.
But I kind of think I should just be doing that with Llanowar Elves. Or at least I got to get less mana sources in my deck or something.
Yeah. That kind of checks out. I think I just never feel that because Mox feels like top decking a land to me and Elves feels slightly different. Though I will say, like, top decking on turn eight with Elves is just bad news anyway. Like, you're just, ideally, the game is done by that turn.
Sure, yeah. That's fair.
But even a turn two, even like, you're like, I don't have Elves in my opener, but I've got a plan, and then you draw Elves turn two, you're like, you're late. Like, what are you doing here? I don't know how to fit you in along the curve anymore.
Sure, right. And a Mox does fit in very nicely there when you draw it on turn two.
Right. You're still doing something. Well, I'm glad to hear you're interested in the green life, and I'm glad to hear that our listeners are as well.
To the point where I think that in the Arena Open, if you ask me day two, if I draft green, if I'm happy or not, I think I'm happy at this point.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I've definitely seen a lot of green. I just think, like, I don't know if it's just the meta, the zeitgeist, whatever, but like in best of three, green is popular.
You know what it is not? Supposedly Wicked. My mom went to see Wicked and said, no, go. She did not enjoy part one.
Well, yeah, well, I guess that's the for spoiler-ish, I guess, out there for folks who don't know, because they're not marketing it this way. But Wicked is only, it's only the first half. It's only act one.
She said it was 3 hours for act one.
So long.
Did they sing every song twice? Like, what happened there?
I truly don't know. I think it's getting pretty good reviews. I don't know.
I'm excited to go see it. My mom was like poo-pooing, and I was like, I'm going to go see it anyway. I appreciate the review. But
you'll have to give us your full review on the show when you go see the movie.
We'll save it for Lords Unlimited.
We'll do a full Lords Unlimited Wicked review. Speaking of Lords Unlimited, let's chat about the Patreon page. Patreon.com/Lords of Limited is where folks can go to give back to the show. If you so choose, we've got a lot of great perks over there. We got access to the Lords of Limited Discord. It is Arena Open weekend. We're recording on Saturday, actually, this weekend. So it's sealed day. This is the day where folks get to, you know, I'm firing one bullet. Who wants to help me with my sealed pool? Love that about the Discord. Love getting to cheer people on in their pursuit of $500, $1,000, or $2,000 on Sunday. That's awesome. We have our Lords Unlimited podcast and our early access podcast feed over there on the Patreon page. You can sign up for that for a free trial if you want to check it out. You can head on over to YouTube to check out the clips of Lords Unlimited if you want. And while you're over on YouTube, give us a little like, give us a little subscribe, all that good stuff. If you're not following us over there.
There it is. I'm getting better. Content creator. I love it.
I'm getting better. I'm doing it. You've nudged me enough. Yeah, last week on Lords Unlimited, we did a nice little grab bag of some stuff we were thankful for in the Magic world. We chatted about some Pioneer Masters previews or like things we were hoping to see from that format. And I have to say, I'm just hoping to see any previews from Pioneer Masters because there's been like 12 of them and almost no commons or uncommons. So truly no idea what that format is going to look like, even though we have an early access event on Thursday this week. So excited for that. Excited for Pioneer Masters. Fingers crossed that that's a good format because that's got to tide us over for a little bit until we get Innistrad remastered in January. A lot of Masters stuff happening. But anyway, I digress. Patreon is the place to give back to the show. We've got some cool perks over there. Lords Unlimited rolling out every week. And we want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they join. This week, we're welcoming Adrian, Benjamin, Steven, Ido, Levi, and Bryce. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah, cannot say thank you enough.
Love to see a Benjamin in there, don't you?
You do love to see a good Benjamin in there. The other thing I was thinking is, you had mentioned the free trial. Does that, like, can you tell that it's a free trial, or are people going to get shouted out on the show for a free trial?
Can you
sneak your name in the app?
I can tell it's a free trial, but I'm still shouting you out. It's on good faith. It's on good faith there. Look,
you just assume we've got good content and that they're going to stick around. I love it.
I'm happy they're checking it out. I'm happy they're signing up. Okay, Ben, I've got a draft log review for you here. One of my very few, someone told me in the YouTube comments, because I don't check this stuff, but I've got a very high trophy rate in best of three on 17 lands. I'm number 3, I think, in Foundations for my trophy percentage, not to toot my own horn. But this draft log was not a trophy. This is an 0-3. I think my only 0-3 in the traditional queues in Foundations. And I wanted to pick your brain and see maybe what I did wrong, where I zigged, where I zagged, and chat about these picks. So
yeah, let's do it. I love giving critical feedback. It's one of my favorite things to do.
I do know that about you. Teacher Ben coming out here. Okay, so Foundations draft, pack one, pick one. You see the following cards as options. No real commons in consideration. There's like an Infestation Sage. There's a Gold Vein pick. There's a Treetop Snare Spinner. But like you're not taking those over either of the cards that I think are actually in consideration, which is Feybloom Trick. An uncommon 2 and a blue instant, make 2/1/1 fairy creature tokens with flying, and when you do, tap target creature and opponent controls. And your rare is Kranko Mob Boss, 2 red for a 3/3, tap it to create X 1/1 red goblin creature tokens, where X is the number of goblins you control.
Yeah, I think it's definitely between those two cards. For me, I would land on Feybloom Trick, like with the fairly comfortably, I think. Feybloom Trick is instant speed, make 2/1/1 flyers, plus at a minimum, either like gain 2-3 life or push 2-3 damage. And sometimes it's like push 7 damage or whatever the turn that you cast it. It does a ton with no work. And Kranko has to stick on the battlefield for several turns before it does something relevant. Costs 1 more mana, is in a worse color, is double pipped. I feel pretty comfortable that I would take Feybloom Trick over Kranko here.
And honestly, I think that's the pick. Like, if you proceed through the rest of the draft with Feybloom Trick, I think the draft is a lot easier. It's a lot clearer what you're supposed to do. And I took Kranko, and I think I was just too, like, I don't know, lost in the 2015 sauce of, like, Kranko's nuts. But it's not nuts anymore. And even just now before, when you were like, I would have made a different pack one, pick one than you, I was like, maybe Kranko sucks. And I do when I have those inklings, I checked 17 lands, looked at the game in hand win rate, and it does indeed. It's an extremely mid at like a 55% game in hand win rate, which that's not what you want from your rares when you take them.
What is Feybloom Trick?
Feybloom Trick is at a whopping 59.2%, so almost 4 percentage points higher.
Like I said, everybody, data's great. Go check out 17lands.com. Got him.
What a troll. Okay, so we'll proceed with Kranko. But you'll see how it's a lot easier if you start with the Feybloom Trick. So I think that's really it. I was thinking that this draft, because as I was going through it again, I was like, I don't really know like what I could have done differently. But I think that's the pick, really. Pack one, pick two. Again, I think it comes down to a couple of uncommons. Arcane Epiphany being one of them. 3 blue for an instant. Draw 3 cards. Costs 1 less to cast if you control a wizard. And Angel of Finality. 3 and a white for a 3/4 flyer. When it enters exile target player's graveyard. Don't think there's any commons I'd consider. There's only one red card to follow up Kranko, and that's Incinerating Blast, but I'm definitely not taking that pick 2.
Yeah, I agree. You landed on Arcane Epiphany here, and I agree with that. I love some card draw. Arcane Epiphany as an instant, I think, really gets there. If it were a sorcery, it would be significantly less good. But this is the real deal in blue decks that can operate at instant speed. And if you're drafting a blue deck in Foundations, it should be able to operate at instant speed.
For sure. Yeah, so I took Arcane Epiphany, just taking what I thought was the best card in the pack. Pack one, pick three, I'm going to keep on doing that, though this pack has, I guess, really only a couple other goodies in it, but Dreadwing Scavenger is all I have eyes for. Don't have this as one of our 25 takes. We'll be doing a little mini takes in the second half of this episode to send off Foundations before Pioneer Masters drops, but Dreadwing Scavenger is Smuggler's Copter. That might be my greatest take I've ever had going into preview season in the history of the show.
It's very good in the format. Smuggler's Copter is, sure, closer to Smuggler's Copter than not. I'll give you your take.
Yeah, thank you, buddy. There's also a Healer's Hawk and a Burglar Rat in the pack, two excellent cards, but you're just slamming Dreadwing Scavenger here. And to Ben's point from pack one, pick one, of just like, if you have Fabloom Trick into Arcane Epiphany into Dreadwing Scavenger, this draft is not hard at all.
Well, the other thing is, I don't even think it's this point, but I also want to pick your brain about this mythic rare sitting here. Rise of the Dark Realms, 7 BB for a sorcery, put all creature cards from all graveyards onto the battlefield under your control. I've not seen it or played with it. Do you is it real? Is it? I imagine 9 is just way too much mana.
Yeah, 9 is too much. I mean, this is a spoiler for a point later, but like 6 is kind of too much mana sometimes. And what we mean by that is a point we've been hammering home a lot about this format over the past few weeks, is that every card matters because of all of the black discard. With Burglar Rat, with Pilfer, with Seeker's Folly, like, you're just so pinched on, well, what am I keeping? Am I keeping the lands to cast my good stuff at the top of my curve? Or am I, like, I've definitely had, I have, the only time I think that I can remember in this format that I've seen Rise of the Dark Realms was in my opponent's hand, and I was playing a black deck, where I was like, all right, I'm going to Burglar Rat you. I'll Pilfer you. Oh, Rise of the Dark Realms, huh? Well, actually, I think I can probably time it where my next Burglar Rat will probably take that out of your hand, because you're just never going to get to the resources you need for this. So that's my feeling on the card, is it's basically nigh uncastable.
Yeah. So Dreadwing Scavenger here, pack one, pick three. But I think pack one, pick four also illustrates another thing with this draft.
Mm-hmm.
So what's going on here?
So pack one, pick four, power level is flat. There's a Gold Vein pick. There's a Bite Down, which might be the best card in the pack. Are you now seeing this card in a new light? Whoa, you don't like Bite Down? Bite Down's good.
It's fine, but it's not the best card in the pack.
This pack isn't very good. I'm sorry. What do you want, this Klingkant Sky Mage, your 4-mana 1/1?
No, Ethan keeps giving me crap because I had Klingkant Sky Mage in one of my 3-0 decks in best of three as a finisher, and I stand by its inclusion in that archetype. I understand it is not a very good Magic the Gathering card. It is not the best card in this pack.
There's a couple 2-drops. There's Elementalist Adept, the 2-mana 2/1 flash prowess in blue, and there's a rare in the pack still, Zul Asher Lich Lord, 1 on a black 2/2 ward, pay 2, tap, you can cast a zombie creature card from your graveyard this turn. I assume that's what you want to take.
I think that's the best card in the pack. It's not what I want to take. What I want to take is Elementalist Adept, the 1 on a blue 2/1 flash prowess. And I think, so you landed on Gold Vein pick here, and I'm curious as to why. Like, what is the hope or the thought process for Gold Vein pick here? Like, where are you picturing you ending up where you want a Gold Vein pick?
A deck where I also have Fabloom Trick, like, you know, because it's good with flyers. Like, I've got the Dreadwing Scavenger. I'm going to have flyers in blue. My buddy told me I should take a Strix Lookout in this deck.
Sure, but you would want the Strix Lookouts first. I mean, so are you thinking, like, when you take Gold Vein pick here, are you moving off Krenko mentally? Are you thinking you're going to, like, splash Krenko off a couple Gold Vein picks?
No, or I could splash Dreadwing Scavenger.
In blue, I was just thinking... Yeah, that's what I think. It looks like you're still valuing Krenko here, but probably also that goes back to you pack one, pick one again.
Right.
Like, I think we just have very different valuations of Krenko. Like, even if you take Krenko,
I think, to be clear, mine is wrong. Like, I just think. I shouldn't have taken Krenko.
Right, but if you did, like, I think this is a fine place to move off it with either Zul Asher or Elementalist Adept. I like Adept because you could still be blue red, and Krenko's not like nothing. You know, it is a card that can win a game on its own uncontested or something. Normally, if I were blue-black, I would want Zoolasher because I think it does a lot of cool things with some zombies at common in the format. But I think Elementalist Adept plays nicely with Arcane Epiphany. I just, blue-black doesn't want a Goldvein pick. Blue-white is what wants Goldvein pick.
I think that's true. Yeah, I think this is another bad selection on my part. I think if we're taking your route, which is Fabloom Trick, Epiphany, Scavenger, I like Zoolasher more. I know what you're saying about Adept being a wizard for Arcane Epiphany. It just feels too early for Adept, which is, I think, a pretty nothing card.
But it's more
Zoolasher at least has a ceiling.
Sure. But Adept isn't a nothing card because it trades with people's two drops. Like, sometimes you randomly trade with a Vampire Gourmand or whatever. And it also, like, it plays at instant speed with Refute and Think Twice and all that other stuff. And it's just a body to not, like, because you have to not fall behind.
But Zool, everything you're saying in that respect, you can say about Zool.
Yes, except it doesn't play at instant speed. But, like, if what I'm saying is, if you tell me I'm 100% blue-black, I'm definitely taking Zoolasher. I just don't know that you need to commit to blue-black in this spot.
That's true.
Which is why I like the Adept. And I think I'm willing to do that because I'm higher on Adept than you are. So mostly I'm trying to talk you up on Adept as a card. Not that it's better than Zoolasher if you're blue-black.
If you know,
in this spot, it is good enough. Like, the gap is close enough that I think you should take Adept to not feel like you're 100% locked into blue-black at this point.
And then pack one, pick five, there's a really interesting card here, which is Leyline Axe. I don't know what this card is doing here. It's 4-mana artifact. If it's in your opening hand, starts on the battlefield. Equip cost of 3, equipped creature gets +1/+1 and has double strike and trample. Don't think that should go fifth pick. But I also don't know if it's going to be that good in a blue deck. Like, when I see this card or when I think about taking it, like, this certainly swings the pendulum back towards Krenko to me, because, like, in a red X beats deck, Leyline Axe will be better.
Yeah, Leyline Axe is absurd, and it definitely should not be here. You're also, I think this is where your draft really, I mean, the last pick in this pick, I think, really derailed, because Leyline Axe is not going to do much for your Dreadwing Scavenger blue-black control deck. Like, that is possibly its worst home in the whole format.
Correct.
And there's a Refute sitting here in the pack. 1 blue-blue instant counter-target spell, draw a card, discard a card. Like, if you go Trick into Scavenger, into Epiphany, into whatever, like, if you got blue-black, I think you're supposed to take Refute in this spot over Leyline Axe, which feels kind of crazy because Leyline Axe is absurdly powerful, but you're headed towards the worst home for it.
Correct. Does it weirdly change if, like, this is a clearer signal for, like, let's say it's a bomb, but it's in a different color, like it's green. I don't know what
that's overrun. Are you going to move into green for overrun here? Like, that kind of thing.
That was kind of what I did take Leyline Axe, and that's kind of what I was thinking about it. I was like, what if this is just a green signal? Or, like, you know, if it's like not just, I'm not thinking about Leyline Axe as a colorless card that's going to go in any deck, but thinking about where is it going to be maximized, and it's going to be maximized with big bodies. Like, I was thinking about it as basically adding it to the Krenko column more than thinking about it like, oh, this will just go in any deck. Though I think it will. Like, it plays nicely with Talarian. Like, if I end up in blue-black with some Talarian Terrors, Leyline Axe on some Terrors is a really nice place to be.
That's fair. What this tells me is, like, I don't trust signals at this point. Like, the four people drafting next to me are just ridiculous. Like, if this made its way to me, pick five, the 3 weeks into the format or whatever, right?
That's very funny.
This means you're drafting with a bunch of crazy people, so you should just stick to your guns about what you want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. It makes me less likely to want to pivot.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I end up in red-green, mostly green, heavy green, but it's not a good deck. It's not a good deck. It does have, like, two elves. It's got the axe. It's got an Atali at the top of the curve. But, like, and I went 1-2 in all of my matches. So, like, you know, a couple things swing in different ways and you win a match here or there. But, like, the deck was bad and the draft was bad. And if I had started with Fabloom Trick, it would have been better.
Well, and I think pick four and pick five too. You had another chance. It does come down to misevaluating Krenko, I think. But
yeah,
pick four if you take either Azul Asher or the Adept mm-hmm. into Refute, which
I just don't think is correct,
with a pack one, pick one Krenko.
Yeah, I don't think I can ever not take Axe in that spot. I think I could if I start with Trick. I don't think if I have Krenko, I don't think I can not take Axe.
That's fair. But if you take Axe, then I still think pick six, you're supposed to take Erudite Wizard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you just aren't supposed to pivot like that.
I know.
In this format. Like you just aren't. To where you started blue and like ended up two different colors. That's a tough sell. In this format.
I was good drafting. I was reading signals. I was seeing what was open. It's good drafting. Believe I even made playables with all those blue cards on the sidelines? This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. I know we often focus on our grinchiness here around the holiday season, but what's something you like to do during the holidays? Any special ways you treat yourself or get cozy at home during December?
Yeah, I really enjoy, after all of the family insanity and all the big get-togethers, just having a day where it's just me in the house and I have no obligations, no responsibilities. I don't set an alarm. I wake up, maybe go get some Starbucks, come back, stream a little, catch up on a Netflix show that I want to watch. Those are some good days during the holidays.
Yeah, for sure. For me, I really look forward to a lazy weekend morning, cup of coffee on the couch, get Jonah reading a book. He's very sparingly not running around like a maniac in our living room. So when I get him still, those are some really nice sort of picturesque moments.
Therapy can also be a great way to bring yourself some comfort that never goes away, even when the season changes.
Holidays can be full of joy, but also be incredibly emotionally stressful. Why not both? I realized I didn't have anything on the calendar with my therapist, and Thanksgiving was a great reminder that I should get something scheduled ASAP. Don't worry, I've got something booked for Tuesday.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge.
Find your comfort this December with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/lords today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lords. And now back to the show. We got time. Let's take a look at a draft log that you've got here.
All right, so pack one, pick one. This is an absolutely stacked pack. So commons, nothing really in consideration. There's a bite down, one on a green for the instant. Target creature deals damage equal to its power to target creature planeswalker you don't control. But a lot of banger uncommons here. There's an Empyrean Eagle, which is the blue-white 2/3 flyer that gives you other flyers +1/+1. Nessian Horn Beetle, the 2/2 that grows if you have a creature power 4 or greater. Heartfire Immolator, the 2/2 prowess in red that you can sack to deal damage equal to its power to target creature or player. And then in black, Arbiter of Woe, the Daddy-O, 4BB for a 5/4 as an additional cost to cast it, sack a creature. When it ETBs, each opponent discards a card, you draw a card, and then drain and gain 2. As well as a rare, Lathril, Blade of the Elves, 2BG for a 2/3 with Menace. When it deals combat damage to a player, create that many 1/1 green elf warrior creature tokens. And then you can tap it, tap 10 untapped elves you control to have each opponent lose 10 life, and you gain 10 life. Do you think anyone has activated Lathril over the course of the format? We need Generation D20 back in our lives because it definitely would have been activated for those of you out there who appreciate deep cuts.
Well, it's funny because we had some chatter in the Lords Limited Discord this week about someone being like, oh, it'd be cool if you guys did an achievement list or whatever. And I was like, oh, sweet summer child.
We've done that.
We did the achievement list life, and it was fun for a time. Not particularly scalable, and also not particularly highly engaged with. But well, Generation D20 is a username of someone who checked a lot of those achievements off for the community.
And if people want to know how Ethan and I have such good chemistry, it's because the rewards for those achievement lists were doing like 15-hour streams together, 18-hour streams together. We forged our chemistry early in the fires of not knowing each other and sitting on screen and drafting over Discord for 15 hours at a time.
And just getting progressively saltier
each other. Those were some miserable streams.
That's so funny. I honestly forgot that we did those, that was what the reward was for those. Okay. So It's between these four uncommons, and I don't know what I would take if I was presented with this. I think I would not take Hornbeetle. I think that is in fourth place for me.
But isn't there a part of you that wants to start green at this point? Like, I've been so elf-pilled at this point that I was seriously considering pack one, pick one, Lathril, which is completely wrong. But those decks Lathril are so is fun.
Terrible. But not, to your point of has it
not when been, you have Banner of Kinship out. Not when you have Banner of Kinship out, baby.
That's fair. Spoiler alert, I guess. I've seen enough screenshots of green decks with Lathril in it that I have to imagine someone out there has activated it.
You got to tweet at us if you have.
In an elf deck, yeah. I need to see it. Show us the receipts. I guess just talk me through rather than me hemming and hawing about what I would have taken, talk me through your thought process here about selecting Arbiter of Woe.
I think it's black. It's in the best color. I don't love starting my draft with a 6-drop, but if it's going to be a 6-drop, I mean, this is a good one. This is rare power level in the format. It's a great card. And I think Empyrean Eagle probably higher upside if you get there, but also much higher risk. I think for me, it was between Arbiter of Woe and Empyrean Eagle if I were spiky. And you just want to take a one color card in this format.
Yeah, I buy it.
All right, so you got Arbiter of Woe. Moving on to pack one, pick two. This is a much worse pack. So black cards to follow up Abadar of Woe with. There's an Infestation Sage, black for the 1/1 that dies into a 1/1 flyer. And then really, there's not a ton else. There's a Banishing Light at common, 2 and a white, exile a non-land permanent until Banishing Light leaves the battlefield. If you like lands, Soulstone Sanctuary, I've seen do some work, taps for a colorless, or you can pay 4 mana to make it a 3/3. The other thing we should talk about, Rogue's Passage. Have you played any Rogue's Passages this format?
I haven't, but I saw Sirkovitz's tweet about it.
Well, I also saw Sirkovitz's tweet about it, and I don't know if this is there's like a phenomenon that when you discover something, you start seeing it all the time. But after seeing that tweet, I have just had to concede to Rogue's Passage like four to five times, probably. I think so. That card's on my radar now, and I also had not put it in my deck. But like, if you're at 7 life. Like, and your opponent plays Rogue's Passage and you're behind. That's the thing it does is the aggro, like it's a lot of times in the format, it's possible for you to get out to a pretty quick start, but then your opponent turn around and stabilize it and you have no chance of turning it around. And Rogue's Passage makes it to where, like, if you get your opponent down to 7 or something, you're probably still going to be able to win the game. It's like Hidetsugu's second right, but for aggro decks or something it doesn't require you to be at a certain life total.
I just got to go back and edit me talking about Rogue's Passage and the Crash Course in this segment, because I think that's exactly the point that I made about it.
You gotta believe in yourself, right?
That was the takeaway. I gotta stick to my guns. I buy it. I wasn't surprised. I was pleasantly surprised, I should say, to see Sirkovitz's tweet about Rogue's Passage sort of doing work, and glad to hear that it is. Because I think it's just interesting how you choose to include it. Is it an 18th land? Is it like, do you think about it as being, I'm in a 10-6 split and I'm allowed to play Rogue's Passage as land 17 because I'm so heavy in this one color? Like, I think those are the interesting questions about when to include it.
I think 8-8 Rogue's Passage is just fine and good. 8-8 Rogue's Passage that want to attack. Yeah.
Mr. I don't want a mulligan ever in this format is okay with 8-8 Rogue's Passage.
I'm okay with 8-8 Rogue's Passage. Just got my stamp of approval.
Wow. Okay. So this pack, the best card in a vacuum is Banishing Light. So there's that. It's about how much do you want to hold on to Arbiter of Woe. And it's interesting because Infestation Sage is so synergistic with Arbiter of Woe. I was going to ask, like, if this is Burglar Rat, you take Rat, right?
No. I think the power level gaps. I think the power level gaps are too high there between Banishing Light and those black cards.
Oh, interesting. I think I would. Maybe I'm too.
I would take any of the 3 black removal spells in this spot over Banishing Light, but not Burglar Rats. I would only take the 3 black removal spells in the spot over Banishing Light. None of the other black commons.
Being Stab, Bake, and Eaten Alive. Okay. I think I would take Rat to get deeper into black.
But definitely not Sage, right?
I think definitely not Sage, though. I don't know. I think Sage is really good. I don't know.
It is really good. I agree.
I think it's like the fact that for me, I was like, I think I would definitely take Rat, But I don't know how much worse Sage is than Rat. Like, Sage is pretty good,
Sage
too.
Sage might even be better than Rat.
Sage might even be better than Rat. Yeah, that's the, sort of the thing is, like, and certainly in the context of Arbiter of Woe, I think this pick is pretty close for me.
I just think it's putting too much weight on Arbiter of Woe, because if you have to pivot off black, like, I think what, like, the types of pivots you did where you, like, were in a color.
We don't need to talk about those. We don't need to reference those pivots.
I think those are, like, very few and far between, but you can move off your first pick in this format. Like, that is a reasonable thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I would be really sad if I got pushed off black.
Yeah.
And had passed a banishing,
passed banishing light. Yeah.
And also, fair. Black White's one of the best archetypes. It's not like we're taking a green card here or something.
Whoa. Don't say it like that. Don't say it like that. Because what are you going to take pack one, pick three?
Pack one, pick three, baby. This is all praise and glory to you. So after the episode last week, I was like, all right, I'll give a try to what we talked about. And this was the pack to do it here. I was feeling a little lost. So
cards, so funny, the there's four out. Black cards, but, like, you don't care about any of them.
Yeah, it's a Marauding Blight Priest, a Macabre Waltz, Vampire Soul Caller, which is the 3/2 flyer that can't block and rebuys a creature, and Billowing Shriek Mass. A 3 and a black for the 2/3 flyer, ETBs, mill 3 cards, and then gets +2/+1 as long as there are 7 or more cards in your graveyard. So none of those in consideration, but the rest of the pack is also atrocious. There's a Dwayne's Elite, which I've got eyes for at this point. One on a green 2/2. When you were talking about Dwayne's Elite wheeling, like clocking those and wheeling those when we recorded last week, I was like, ooh, man, Ethan is lost in the sauce. And now I'm totally on board. I'm like, give me those Dwayne's Elites on the wheel.
You wonder why I have to, like, feel like I walk back all of my takes. It's because I'm judged so harshly one person who should have my back is always like, I don't know, this Ethan guy might not know what he's talking about.
It's friendship, right? I respect your opinion enough to push back against it.
That's a lovely spin. Lovely way to spin it. But to that point, there's a Dwinen's lead in this pack, but you're not trying to take that here.
No.
You're just thinking about it exists.
Yes, it exists. And would be very good if you moved into green. Yeah. So there's Vanguard Seraph, which is the 3 and a white 3/3 flyer. When you gain life for the first time each turn, surveil 1. And then in the rare slot, Banner of Kinship, 5 mana for an artifact. And this is my first time playing with this card. In this draft, had I played with this card prior to this spot, I would have just easily slammed Banner of Kinship here, but I didn't quite know how broken it was in Elves. So it's 5 mana for an artifact. When it enters, choose a creature type. It enters with a fellowship counter on it for each creature you control of the chosen type. Creatures you control of the chosen type get +1/+1 for each fellowship counter on this artifact. If you're Elves in green, which is not hard to be, It's pretty easy to get this to be +3/+3 to all your elves.
Which is like 10 of your creatures. Like, it's most of your creatures.
Most of your creatures. And it's really strong. So, for example, if you go Llanowar Elves, Dwinen's Elite, nothing, and then Banner of Kinship, all of a sudden you've got a 4/4, a 4/4, and a 5/5, which is just ridiculous. So,
yeah.
I did spec on the Banner of Kinship here on your behalf and was very pleased with the result.
Well, and while I do think Elves is the most supported type in the format and is the place where Banner of Kinship is at its best, like, there's creature type stuff in all the colors, right? There's angels in white, and they need the buff the least, probably. But there's angels in white, and that's easy to do, and you've got the Banishing Light. You can get some other stuff, like vampires or zombies, I guess, if you're in black. There's goblins even with the goblin surprise. I've definitely got by that surprise into banner +4/+4 to all the goblins. So, like, you can do it even outside of green.
Yeah. So pack one, pick four, another terrible pack that I would have been very sad with had I not taken Banner of Kinship. Refute is the best card in the pack, but I don't really have inroads into blue. Mm-hmm. And starting into blue with a refute is not a great feeling without other removal spells or ways to catch up, you know?
Right.
So it took a Dwine and Guiltleaf Dane here, the 2GG for 3/4 with reach, and gives your other elves +1/+1. And whenever it attacks, you gain a life for each elf you control. And happily moved into elves, strongly considered getting derailed pack one, pick five by Revenge of the Rats because I had Banner of Kinship.
Lots of
ways to dump rats on the battlefield. That's 2 black for a sorcery that makes a 1/1 rat for each creature card in your graveyard. with Flashback to Black Black. But I decided by the time I did Banner of Kinship doing nothing and Rats doing nothing, that was a little too much do nothing to try to set up. But I did move into Black Green Elves here. This deck was nuts. And it was super fun to play. Banner of Kinship was the MVP for sure. And it took what would have been, I think, likely a train wreck draft for me into what could have been a trophy. I played very close matches in match two, or games in match two. Lost a heartbreaker. I think it could have maybe made some different decisions. But this deck was sweet.
Yeah, I'm looking at this. This is awesome. I was seeing if I was like, did you wheel the Lathril from pack one? You didn't, but you did end up getting one anyway. You got a Llanowar Elves, you got some good removal. Four drop slot is stacked, as it always is in black green. Yeah, nice looking deck. Well, glad to hear it. Glad to hear you put some stuff into practice.
Thanks to Miracle Made for sponsoring this episode. Did you know traditional bed sheets can harbor more bacteria than a toilet seat, which can lead to acne, allergies, and stuffy noses? Plus, it's just plain gross. Miracle Made offers a whole line of self-cleaning, antibacterial bedding such as sheets, pillowcases, and comforters that prevent up to 99.7% of bacteria growth and require 3 times less laundry.
Miracle Made sheets are inspired by NASA and use silver-infused fabrics that are temperature regulating, so you can sleep at the perfect temperature all night long. Washing the sheets is definitely one of my least favorite chores. Untying and retying the duvet cover, getting the sheets back on. Somehow it's always time to make the bed when I want to go to bed. But with Miracle Made, we don't have to do it nearly as often, and it's always super comfy to go to sleep.
Miracle Made sheets are luxuriously comfortable without the high price tag of other luxury brands and feel as nice, if not nicer, than sheets used by some 5-star hotels.
Go to trymiracle.com/LOL to try Miracle Made sheets today. And whether you're buying them for yourself or as a gift for a loved one, if you order today, you can save over 40%.
And if you use our promo code LOL at checkout, you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. And if you aren't 100% satisfied, Miracle has a 30-day money-back guarantee.
Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/LOL and use code LOL to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off.
Again, that's trymiracle.com/LOL to treat yourself. And now, back to the show.
And that's probably the last time we'll touch a Foundations draft on the show. It's tough to know like what the next couple months looks like in terms of, like, ideally we're playing some Pioneer Masters for a while, and that's good. Then we're playing some Innistrad Remastered, and that's good. And then we're into Aether Drift, I think, at the beginning of next year, but not quite the beginning in February, I think. So we are going to do a little mini takes for Foundations to send it off here. Only 25, which is lucky, I think, for us, because I'm not sure we could have scraped and scrabbled to get 50 takes together for this format. But we do have some good stuff to reminisce and think about it, which is weird to say after a format we've only had around for 3 weeks.
Pre-Arena Open.
Yeah, pre-Arena Open. But in any event, we'll get 25 minutes on the clock and start off with point number one, which is Foundations lived up to its name and was a true return to core set Magic. A big win, I think, in this respect.
Yeah, I think if your goal is to make a core set, Foundations was a hit in all metrics, almost. I think there'll be a couple other things we'll get to in these 25 takes, but generally I think this introduces you to some iconic cards. Those iconic cards are actually good, you know, that sort of thing. Colors do what the colors do generally in Magic. All that stuff is a huge win for Foundations.
Well, and also that it really, you know, I was not saying this as a disparaging remark, but like bread and butter, whatever, meat and potatoes, ABCs of limited Magic, this really does, like, it brings you back to basics in, I think, a good way of like, hey, here's what you want to focus on for limited in terms of curve, cards mattering, removal, synergy, but it's not synergy in terms of a whole, like, greater than the sum of its parts, engine-y stuff. Like, it really just teaches you fundamentals of drafting, I think.
Yeah, your deck should end up with 15 to 18 creatures, you know, like 5 to 6 removal spells, and a couple other cards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Number two, commons matter again.
Yeah, shout out to commons. And I'm so curious to see if this is a dial they're able, if this is just a sort of anomaly for Foundations, or if this is a dial they're able to turn for play boosters moving forward.
I think it's bad. if they do turn it back this way and commons matter again. Like, if you think about it, because there's less commons, the commons, like, if they're good, matter even more because you're going to see them more because there's less commons per color, right? Or I don't know how the math checks out. I'm sure Sukhovitz will tell us. But it felt bad to me after uncommons mattering, coming back to commons mattering. And maybe some of that is them being smushed into a core set. But it's also why the format felt out of balance, right? Because the commons were good and the colors with the good commons were the best. And it was very hard to unseat that.
So we're hoping that this is a core set dial that they turned rather than something that they'll be like, and then one set a year, two sets a year, commons are back.
And not the commons have to be bad, but just the uncommons mattering more than the commons do, I think is a great place for limited. It just adds so much variety.
Yeah, the fact that I think in the play booster era, there's really a handful, sub 10, certainly, maybe around 5, like commons that you're probably actually happy first picking, I think just makes for more varied drafts and more varied deck building, and that's more fun. Whereas, like, there's so many commons in this format that I'm fine first picking, and it's mostly because they're all just rock solid removal spells.
Right.
Number 3, iconic cards that could have been power crept out or balanced to be great again. Sarah Angel, so good. As good as it's been in Alpha. And that's sort of the case for a lot of these cards, right?
Yeah. Overrun, getting its time in the sun again. +3/+3 and trample to the team.
And Llanowar Elves. I eat my hat about poo-pooing that card in the crash course. That card does work for sure. Refute has like the best cancel variant we've seen. Like Refute being what I think is the best blue common. Again, maybe not that's generally not always a high watermark, but the cards are really cool in this format. There's so many that I was looking through as I was looking through the spoiler. I was like, they're going back to it. You'd be like, no, really, that card is good. Phyrexian Arena being on it, that list being like, this card has been bad in previous sets. It's been bad for a long time. And it's so good in this format, I think.
Well, and also just Refute as a counterspell for blue, like blue getting to play with counterspells in limited. Like if you're telling somebody about color identities in Magic, what does blue do? Counters your spells. Like, and you get to do that in limited, which is not true often in formats for cancel to be that big of a player, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
I just pour one out for Shivan Dragon. They did all this balancing for iconic cards. It didn't make the cut.
It's tough. Hard to help it. You know, you can only do so much for a Derpy 6 drop. Sorry to say.
Number 4, the Lords of Limited official color power rankings. In first place, black.
In second place, white.
In third place, blue. And I think all three of those grouped pretty closely together. Feel pretty strongly that those are the top three. And I think you could make a case for blue ahead of white, depending on how you like to draft.
Yeah, but I think black clearly in first place. Like, if we were doing greater than signs, I think there would be a couple. I think black is, maybe it's
no.
Black. Yeah, black is definitely the best color.
But not multiple greater than signs worth. That seems a little hyperbolic.
But they're not grouped together. That's my point. But black is clear first.
Yeah, maybe. Sure.
He wants to fight me, but he's like, it's Foundation's 25 takes. What do I care? Number 4.
That's exactly what's going through my head. Do I really want to derail the show here? No.
Number 4, red, and bringing up the rear, but we love you anyway. Number 5, green.
Is green ahead of red? Is there a chance that that's true?
It's possible. I'm not sure what red does. Red has Burst Lightning and Heartfire Immolator, and that's about it that I like from red.
Like green, if it's open, actually gives you a plan. I don't know that red gives you a plan.
I agree with that. You want to hot take it right here?
Let's hot green, take it live. Green 4, red 5.
Red 5. There it is. Number 5, green wanted to be aggressive. Sort of counterintuitive that the value cards like an Elvish Regrower, I still think a good card, but counterintuitive that something like Elvish Regrower or Affectionate Indric are worse/lower signals in my mind for green decks than cards like Overrun and Garruk's Uprising, which I stand by being great. The data has that card in the dumpster, and I cannot figure out how that's possible, because every time I play against it, it feels like the one card I can't beat from green decks, and it's always so good for me. So I don't know what's going on out there with Uprising and the masses.
Yeah, I agree. Uprising, great. But just something like casting Llanowar Elves into Beastkin Ranger, like Llanowar Elves into threat. The other card that's giving me a ton of problems that I cannot get in my decks when I'm drafting green is the stupid 4-3 Morbid creature that has Ward 2. It's so annoying to play against that card. The Ward 2 really pushes that over the top.
Yeah, I mean, that card is like the definition of filler. One time that I feel like I'm able to justify fitting that in the deck is when I've got Garruk's Uprising and I'm like, how do I get, I just need maximum 4 power creatures in the deck.
Yeah. All right, number 6. Some iconic cards that were not included in this format that I think were misses. Sengir Vampire, 3BB for the 4/4 flyer, and if a creature died, it gets a counter on it. Like, if you're going to put Sarah Angel in, how do you not include Sengir Vampire?
The yin to Sarah Angel's yang.
I mean, is it not? That's how they were in my head as a kid.
I totally agree. I think that's a good shout. You have Doomblade on this list, but why not Terror?
Because it dies to Doomblade, right? Like, if you're introducing people to Magic, dies to Doomblade. Like, how is Doomblade not in here as an uncommon or a rare? So I guess they probably just didn't want that in Standard. Is that the thing? Because all these cards are going to be in Standard?
For 5 years? Yeah, I guess I don't know. Maybe. Is Doomblade too good? Can't be.
I don't know. But yeah, that would be the only reason to not, right? It's such an iconic card.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have Divination on this list as not being included. I think that... Would that have been too good?
It would have been too good at common. I think it would have had to have been an uncommon. But
yeah,
again, if this is the foundations for new players, like getting into Magic, how is Divination not in there? Like, because people are going to hear about that card all the time, and then they could have played with it in foundations. So I think there are some misses.
Okay, this fourth card you have here, this is wild. Did you want to play with this card?
Force of Nature, 2GGGG for an 8/8 trample, and you have to pay 4 green during your upkeep, or it taps itself and deals 8 damage to you, right?
Yeah.
I just think iconic cards. Like, for me, as a card, like Shivan Dragon is, from my childhood, Force of Nature is a card that, like, if I think Magic impressions from my childhood, the first time I saw Force of Nature was like, wow, that card is awesome, you know? Like... stuff like that, but that one I think less egregious of an exclude, certainly. But Sengir Vampire, Doomblade, and Divination, I think those could, and I would even say should, have been in there.
How about Healing Salve? Should Healing Salve have been?
We're trying not to put trap cards in limited these days,
sure,
right?
Sure. Sure. Number 7. In addition to nailing a core set feel, each color was given a strong color identity. And I also want to shout out, as we'll talk about a little later, but shout out the sort of sub-themes of types mattering, right? That the angel stuff, the vampire stuff, zombie, which is all very, again, iconic to Magic. And I kind of poo-pooed it in the Crash Course, but it really did have legs in the format.
Yeah. So black had the sacrifice theme. Blue had kind of the instant speed control theme going on. White, definitely aggressive. Green
and life gain.
But that was more of a black-white thing, but it was seeded into white specifically more, I think.
Yeah.
Green had the ramp with the Llanowar Elves, and red, which is why we moved red to fifth place. Red didn't really have a strong color identity.
Yeah, I guess pour one out for red.
Number 8, black was the best color because removal was important, and it got removal in spades. Talk about stab, black, instant, -2/-2, bake into a pie, 2BB, instant, kill something, make a food. Eaten alive, black for the sorcery. As an additional cost, you can sack something or pay 3 and a black to exile target creature or planeswalker. These were all excellent cards.
Yeah, I feel like now we've got back-to-back sets where the sacrifice a thing, exile a thing have been good. And Eaten Alive, I think, gets a pass because of the modality of it as well. But I feel like I'm already predisposed to like those effects. And I feel like even more so. But also, like, speaking of cards that have been bad in previous sets, Hero's Downfall, good again. Like, that there have been sets, like, remember the first time it was, like, downshifted from rare. We're like, oh my god, that's crazy. And then there have been sets where it's been printed, and you're like, this card just doesn't matter. Murder doesn't matter. Hero's downfall mattered.
Yeah, for sure. I think my least favorite thing about Eaten Alive is you know when it's happening about 5 seconds before it's happening, because there's the pause with the single black up, and then you see the mouse over their worst creature, and then you see the mouse over your best creature, and you're like, no.
Yeah. Number 9. This is one of the least play draw disparity formats we've had in a while, and that, I believe, is thanks to the powerful one mana removal. Stab and Burst Lightning grabbed the play back from people.
Is that true?
Yeah, it's like 51% or something. It's almost a coin flip.
But some of that, like, well, first of all, I don't know. I want to push back against the data here a little bit.
Okay.
It feels miserable to be on the draw in this format when both of you have functional hands. Like, being on the play feels like a great advantage to me, mitigated only by the fact that if you're on the play and you mulligan, it just feels like you lose also, like, which probably swings it back towards more even.
That's why I feel like being on the, like, there are definitely hands I have, especially when my hands are interaction heavy. And that's not this format specific, but I feel like this format gives you, because of the rules of engagement of this format, you are more likely to have removal heavy or interaction heavy hands. I want those hands on the draw all day. I definitely have hands in this format where I'm like, yeah, I'm on the play, fine. I wish I was on the draw.
Yes.
You know, stab, Hero's Downfall, Bake, or whatever.
That's my opener. It's been a long time since I've ever felt I wish I were on the draw, and I do feel that in this format sometimes.
And and that's because of, I think, exactly those two cards. If Stab and Burst Lightning don't exist, I bet the pendulum swings back again 53, 54% or whatever.
Interesting. Number 10. Each color pair had a theme that was seeded by its gold uncommon, but they weren't that important compared to just having great card quality in your decks.
Yeah, were any of them, I guess, like Empyrean Eagle, certainly Dreadwing Scavenger, but there were few of them that you felt good about.
But Dreadwing Scavenger wasn't the theme. That was just a great card, right?
Right.
Empyrean Eagle was the theme of flyers. Uh-huh. And I think the Fiendish Panda, the black-white card, again, was the theme of life gain, but that wasn't the reason. Like, there were just other life gain cards that made life gain good. Like, I don't think the gold uncommons, the themes that were put there by WotC were that strong or important.
Yeah. I'm so sad. Like, Balmor was a card I was so inclined to want to take highly, and I had a real learning curve of like, gotta bump that down in my pick order, gotta bump that down a little bit more, Ethan, stop taking it so highly. Number 11, card advantage and card filtering were difficult to come by and were second only to bombs and premium removal. Again, why we think probably Divination might have been too good at common. But even something like the loot on Refute, like counter a spell plus loot, so good.
So good. And you pitch an extra land and you're basically up a card on your opponent.
Yeah. Yeah. Really, really strong.
Number 12. Speaking of that, every card matters. Holy cow. Mulliganing was rough. Major card selection options worse with less resources overall. Stuff like Burglar Rat just put a huge pinch on cards in your hand. It was tough.
Well, and I think part of that goes to there wasn't a lot of card advantage, but there was card selection. But how much worse does your Refute get when you mulligan and then your opponent Burglar Rats you? Like, you just have, you're like, well, I need everything, so I don't know what I'm supposed to pitch. Like, my loots on Dreadwing Scavenger aren't as powerful because I have so much less resources to work with.
Yep, that's fair.
Number 13, Rats and Cats are back. And as a result, I mean, so certainly Burglar Rat, the Helpful Hunter, Infestation Sage, these little derpy 1/1s made one toughness a huge liability on the ground. Like, if you were trying to attack with your Cathar Commandos or your Wary Thespians, you were in for a bad time, I think.
Well, as well as just Chonky Donkers without Trample trying to get in. Like,
sure.
That was also a tough ask. Like, you just needed Trample to be able to push through the littering of things that were laying around on the ground.
Here's a card we didn't talk about. It should have been on my trap list for last week with green. Is it Apothecary Stomper, the like Honey Mammoth variant?
Oh, that card is horrible.
That card is terrible. That is the worst we've ever seen that kind of card. Like, if that had been Ravenous Lindworm, would it have been good? Like,
the
if
six,
it was
six,
a
6-6? Six,
six, no, not no Trample. It doesn't have Trample.
Oh, no. It would not have been good. It would have been, okay. It would need to be Colossal Dreadmaw. That's what it needed to be.
It needed to just be Dreadmaw, which would have been iconic.
That would have been iconic.
Yeah.
Number 14, the creature type matters subthemes actually got there, especially elves.
Yeah. These 25 takes are extremely green slanted, but that's just what we've got on the brain right now.
Are they green slanted? I don't think that's true.
Talking a lot of devoting a bit to green here. We've moved it up in the power rankings in the upset of the century. Yeah. Shout out to elves. I thought that was a really cool thing to finally come around to. But also, as we talked about with Banner of Kinship in the draft log review, of like, you could do it. You can do it outside of green too, and get there. Number 15, getting to 6 mana was tough, especially against black decks, which just goes back to the every card matters thing. Is this the best that like hand disruption has ever been? Like,
oh, for sure. But that's a nod to how bad the decision making in the format is. Like, there's just not interesting decisions to make. Like, Burglar Rat's great because I'm on the play, I'm mulliganing, I have 6 cards, and then your first play is Burglar Rats, and I have to pitch another card. Like, you're just never winning that game, right? You're just never winning that game.
Seekers, I've just Seekers Follied so many last 2 cards from my opponents this format.
Are you on board with Seekers Folly being insane?
Buddy, I have been, no, I don't think it's insane. I have been a fan of Seekers Folly for weeks. I liked it when you talked about it. I could never love it as much as you love it. It's not possible. I would be remiss if I didn't shout out a screenshot that our friend Stunlock sent to us. If we're talking about Seeker's Folly, his opponent has Spectral Sailor, Mischievous Mystic, and double Mocking Sprites in play, and he's mousing over a Seeker's Folly in his hand.
Feels good, man.
Moments before disaster. Like, call an ambulance, but not for me. Whatever meme you want. But yeah, Seeker's Folly can do it.
Plague Wind and Mind Twist. You'll love to see it. Number 16. 2 toughness on a creature for anything that was 3 mana or more was a very tough ask, thanks to Stab and Burst Lightning in the format.
Yeah. And not to say that you wouldn't play any of them, but you just had to really be, like, they had to have ETBs or leave the battlefields, like the panda, but even the panda got by Stab in a bad way. But like, you really had to be selective about those, because the tempo swings of, it's why that, like, it's a good card ish, but the flash rare, the 4/2 flyer in blue,
exactly,
that makes everything
the card
instant,
I was thinking of. Yeah.
It's just like, that card's in another format might be great. In this format, it's like, okay, but probably just going to die to Burst Lightning. And when it does, you're going to feel really bad.
Yeah.
Number 17, the Lords of Limited official, though we're not in agreement on a couple of these, official top common of each color.
In white, Dazzling Angel.
Cosine. Though, is it possible it's Healer's Hawk? It's not possible.
No, it's not. Okay. Dazzling Angel's way better than Healer's Hawk.
Okay. Okay.
In blue,
we have the it's too close to call for blue. In one
too
camp.
Too close to call? No. It's Big Fin Bouncer.
It's Refute.
3/2 bounce a thing.
It's Refute.
You can't get into blue for Refute, though. That's the thing. Like, you can take Big
Fin
Bouncer.
You shouldn't get into blue for Big Fin Bouncer either.
How are you getting into blue then?
I'm taking Mischievous Mystic, and then I want Refute. Or I'm taking whatever, Dreadwing Scavenger, and then I want Refute. I don't know. Like, I know you didn't like the instant speed package of stuff, and you didn't do the like spells heavy Talarian Terror life a lot. And I did. I want Refute in those decks more than Big Fin Bouncer. They're just different decks. That's the thing. But, and Big Fin Bouncer leads you to blue white, and Refute doesn't. And you drafted a lot of blue white, and I didn't.
That's fair. I hear what you're saying, but we got to pick a winner. How are we going to do that? We're just stalemating. Let the people decide. Put up a Twitter poll. Let's let the masses decide. Ethan looks so depressed about that thought. I'll do it. I'll sign into the Lords of Limit account and I'll do it. I'll make it happen. But
what I don't want is that, like, if Big Fin Bouncer wins by like 51% to 49%, you're going to be like, taste it. And then if Refute wins 51% to 49%, you're going to be like, what do people know? Like, there's no beating you in this scenario. So I don't know what the point of the Twitter poll is going to be. It's only going to cause me pain.
It's going to make me feel better.
Oh my God.
So the funny thing about all of this is, I think both of us would have bet our life savings that it would have been Talarian Terror going into the format.
Yes, and I don't think it is. I like Talarian Terror for what it's worth, but it's a lot less supported than it was in Dominaria United.
Yeah, and I think that's the one reprint that was a banger in its format that hasn't maintained banger status.
Yeah, that's true. I think for what it's worth that it's better that Talarian Terror isn't as busted as it was. It felt like almost format warping a little bit in DMU, and it doesn't feel that way in this format. And the removal is also good, and so like it doesn't feel like a Talarian Terror that gets cast cheaply can't be answered cheaply or effectively, you know? So I think for what it's worth, that's a good move. We can go back to some harmonious agreement. Black, stab, best common.
I think so, yeah. And in red, burst lightning, best common.
For sure. In green, I do think it's Beastkin Ranger, personally.
I've got Llanowar Elves green for the mana dork. If somebody has to give in here, I will give in to Beastkin Ranger if we're trying to come to a consensus. I think if we want the Lords of Limited official top common, I will concede Beastkin Ranger to you because I also like that card a lot, and I'm not so sold on Llanowar Elves. The case I want to make for Llanowar Elves is that Llanowar Elves makes Dwinen's Elite much better. Like when you can actually play Dwinen's, because green doesn't have two drops because the stupid Gnarled Colony is so abysmal.
Yeah.
That making Dwinen's Elite, the curve of Llanowar Elves into a Dwinen's Elite on two, if you have to, is another big vote in Llanowar Elves' favor for me.
If you're drafting an Elves deck, I think Llanowar Elves is more important. But I think like in terms of getting into green, there are different green decks. Elves is a part of it, but you can just be green beatdown. And Beastkin Ranger is important to both buckets. And I think Llanowar Elves is less important to if you're like low curve. If you're just like green, white, go wide or green, red, beatdown. Beastkin Ranger is still really important and Elves is less so.
I'll co-sign Beastkin Ranger. We're putting the stamp on Beastkin Ranger. Also, we have talked a lot about green in this episode. Number 18, the Golden Egg Award goes to Burglar Rat. One in a black for 1/1 ETBs. Your opponent discards a card.
Sorry, Gold Vein pick. And that's another one. Banger in Kaldheim. Less of a banger here, I would say.
Like, well, that's because Kaldheim had card draw, like a reasonable amounts of card advantage. You can't afford a dead card in this format, which Gold Vein pick is a lot of the time. It's just a brick some amount of the time. And cards that could be bricks are very dangerous to put in your deck.
Yeah. Yeah. Burglar Rat, super awesome. Number 19, the Imperial Oath Award for clunky looking overperformer goes to Treetop Snare Spinner. Speaking of talking about green a lot.
Yeah, this card's a brick wall. I'm pretty down on this card these days.
I agree.
It is an overperformer and powerful. Like, it fits all the criteria for the Imperial Oath Award. I like it in this spot. Mm-hmm. I think the other card that you could potentially put here is Squad Rallier. This has been a late format mover up for me. This is 3 and a white for the 3/4. You can pay 2 and a white to look at the top 4 cards of your library. You reveal a creature card power 2 or less from among them and put it into your hand and put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order.
Yeah, I like that. I think that could fit. I was also saying that I think another card I was considering for this was the 4 and a red 4/4 that has raid deal 2 to something. That's been impressive, but
and honestly, any of those. I might like Cackling Prowler over it as well. The 3 and a green 4/3 ward 2. Like, I think I'm more likely to pick Cackling Prowler at this point in my green decks than I am Treetop Snare Spinner. I have found myself wanting a Cackling Prowler and unable to get it.
Interesting. All right, well, let us know, folks. Let us know what you think the Imperial Oath Award winner is. We'll adjust the log as necessary.
Number 20, Secret Reach is back. Dwinen has reach.
I mean, I've gotten so many people with this card. Even it's like truly, it's wild. I think you just don't expect it. It doesn't look like it should have reach. It doesn't particularly evoke anything that means it would have reach, and yet there it is. It's got a lot of other text that you have to focus on, and then there's reach just hidden in there.
I think people are getting numb to the giant flashing arrow, right? Like, the first time it was new, it was like, boom, 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 here, warning signs. Now, like you're used to the icon a little bit more.
For sure. Number 21, the Lords of Limited official sleeper card of each color. In white, we've got Youthful Valkyrie. Angels could happen. And this growing to just a 2/4 was problematic.
In blue, Strix Lookout, one on a blue for the 1/2 Vigilance Flyer that could tap to loot.
How could we not talk about Strix Lookout in the 25 takes? In black, Seeker's Folly, for sure. We've already talked about it. Mind Rot and Plague Wind in one card.
In red, Gorehorn Raider. That's the 4 and a red for the 4/4 with Raid and ETBs deal 2 damage to a target.
In green, I can't believe it. I wouldn't be even saying this if it wasn't for the data. Garrick's Uprising.
Yeah, love all of those takes. Number 22, Heraldic Banner did work in every color. This is the 3-mana artifact that you choose a color when it comes into play, taps for that color mana, and gives your team +1/+0 for creatures of that color.
Yeah, I mean, there's cat tokens running around in white and just like whatever. So buffing your creatures, period, is good. But then being able to turn 1/1 specifically into 2/1, I think, is where this card really shines. And every color had that.
Yeah, blue had some fairies, black had the rats, the infestation sages, red had goblins running around, green turns your land of werewolves into 2/1s, which makes them a more relevant card after you're done using them, that sort of stuff.
Dwinen's Elite being a 3/2 and a 2/1 for one body. And honestly, with infestation sage, probably the best, because the infestation sage is a 2/1 and the insect is a black-green creature, and so that dies into being a 2/1 flyer as well. Number 23, gain lands that only touched one of your colors were still great in black-white life gain. You would play tapped plains and tapped swamp in those decks if it meant you could trigger your cat collector.
Right. You needed cat collectors and Ajani's Pride Mates before you were interested in that. Specifically, I think Ajani's Pride Mate even more than cat collector, but you're probably doing it for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Number 24, the official Lords of Limited archetype power rankings. In first place, blue-black.
In second place, blue-white.
In third, white-black. And I think there's a gap. And I think you maybe could mix those up in whatever order.
Yeah, but the Esper color pairs for sure. Number 4, red-black.
Number 5, red-white.
Number 6, red-green.
And then maybe another gap there. I don't know. Really, it's those top 3 archetypes. And then I think everything else kind of in a wash more than anything else. Yeah.
And maybe the bottom, because like the green color pairs, we'll round out the list. Number 7, green, white.
Number 8, blue, red.
Number 9, green, black.
And number 10, green, blue.
Because like the green color pairs are not different decks, really.
Right. They are green decks. Yeah.
They're green decks. And so like having 10 archetypes on this list is sort of a lie. Because like, yes, the Esper decks are different. And like you have them grouped as like Esper decks, red aggressive decks. And then green decks, and then decks you're like not that excited about slash don't, or like I like blue red, it just doesn't come together that often, or it didn't for me. But like when I got good blue red decks, they were quite strong. But like that's sort of, I feel like, what's reflected in this list.
For sure.
And number 25, Foundations was a good core set, but not a great draft set. And I think that speaks to the point about commons mattering. Again,
well, commons mattering, also complexity of cards, also synergy. Like there was not a lot of decision making to be done in the games. Like when I, and we're going to talk about this on Lords Unlimited this week, but going from Foundations to the no holds barred Vintage Cube, I was like, oh my
God. Did you get whiplash?
It was a lot for my brain. Also, I streamed for like 6 hours on Wednesday because we didn't have school, which was the longest I've streamed sequentially in a long time.
Yeah, I think I like watched you for a little bit, like left to go do something, came back and you were still on. And I was like, man, I can't remember the last time I've seen a Ben Wernie two-parter stream before.
Yeah. So I think Foundations nailed what it was supposed to do. What it was supposed to do is just not something I'm particularly interested in at this point in my Magic career, but I think a great introductory set for new people coming into Magic for the next 5 years.
And I think I was happier to draft it than you were. And I think I enjoyed myself for these past few weeks. But like, if you told me we had to podcast about it for another 4 weeks, I'm not sure that would be my top choice, let's say.
Right. There's just not a lot of juice left to squeeze.
That's what I think. So we'll send off foundations, good fundamentals, good clean magic, and hopefully got some exciting stuff on the horizon with Pioneer Masters next week.
All right. Great place to wrap us up. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all of our content on our website at lordsoflimited.com. There's links to our tier list, links to our merch, courtesy of TeePublic, our Patreon page, if you're curious about that. All of our content, our episode backlogs, our YouTube channel, and our Twitch streams, respectively, all available at lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.